a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Wanted to make sure your cell phones are turned off or turned to the silent mode. And at this time, I'd ask the secretary to call the roll.
Representatives Kamak.
Here.
Cronin. Greenfield.
Here.
Kirschman.
Here.
Miller. Nelson. Parsley.
Here.
Peterson.
Here.
Rounds.
Here.
Stalzer.
Here.
Westra.
Here.
Consett.
Here.
And Solem.
Here.
We have a quorum.
We have a quorum with the majority of the members elect present. And at this time, I trust you've all had an opportunity to review the minutes of our last meeting and would entertain a motion. The motion to approve minutes by Representative Rounds and seconded by Representative Parsley. All in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are approved. With that, we'd like to have our page, a page, come up and introduce yourself, please.
Is it on?
Sure.
Okay. I'm DJ Beckwith. I'm from here in Pierre. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, DJ. Appreciate that. And just as a reminder, if anyone here has anything to distribute to the rest of the committee, please use our page to do our legwork for us. We appreciate your help. Just a one piece of housekeeping. The chair is going to defer House Bill 1052. We are going to hear that because our next committee meeting will be next Wednesday, the 23rd. We will move 1052 to next Wednesday, January 23rd. Otherwise, we will hear the other bills in order, and unless there's any other administrative business, we're going to go right to work. And maybe I could, just for information purposes for our new members, you see the introduction here on our bill, in this particular case, the Committee on Commerce and Energy, at the request of the Department of Labor and Regulation. And this is a means that where our departments have the opportunity, the wherewithal, to introduce legislation to our legislative session. And they turn around and prior to session ask the committee chairs if our committee would, so to speak, be the sponsor of that piece of legislation. And thus is the case with the legislation we're looking at today. And then I actually authorize that legislation to be brought to the committee. Now, once we get through the hearing process, and if we should send a piece of legislation to the floor, I will assign one of our committee members to carry that down on the floor, because obviously our state agencies can't do that. So we have to be do the legwork for them. Okay, with that, we will now open the hearing on our first bill, House Bill 1051. House Bill 1051 is an act to revise certain provisions related to the director's orders to hazardous insurers. And with that, I would open up proponent testimony for House Bill 1051. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Joshua Anderson, and I am with the South Dakota Department of Labor and Regulation, Division of Insurance. We're bringing forth House Bill 1051 this morning, and as by way of a little background, the Division of Insurance is responsible for the financial regulation of all domestic insurance companies that call South Dakota home. And we have entered into an agreement with the other states that have our members of the National Association of Insurance Commissioners, the NAIC, and we have basically what amounts to reciprocity with them. Our financial regulators get accredited, and then the other members of that organization, the other states, will take our financials that have been audited and reviewed and approved, and they will give them credit in their state. So in short, it saves our South Dakota domestic insurers from having to have their financials audited in every jurisdiction they're in. They just have to have it done once. In April of this year, we're up for accreditation, and we will have an accreditation team coming in and taking a look at our procedures and our folks to make sure that we're meeting those standards. In preparation for that, we compared the laws we had in place with the national models that all of the states in this association have agreed to live by, and we found a couple of changes that have been made in the model. So what House Bill 1051 does is updates the model, or our law, excuse me, to the model, so that when the accreditation team comes in, we're hopeful that they will approve us and we can continue to have that reciprocal relationship with the other states, both for our benefit and the benefit of our domestic insurance companies. And with that, I will stand by for any questions the committee may have. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there any other proponent testimony? Proponent testimony to House Bill 1051. Proponent testimony. Seeing none, is there any opponent testimony? Opponent testimony? It's your lucky day. Seeing no opponent testimony, I would waive the rebut portion and open this up to committee questions. Any questions of the committee? No questions? We're going to let him off the hook? That's pretty good. Seeing no questions, I'm sorry, Representative Condit, nothing? Okay. I will close the public portion of the hearing and now open it up for committee action. Representative Condit.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move due pass on House Bill 1051.
The motion do pass by Representative Condit and seconded by Representative Rounds on House Bill 1051. Any comments, Representative?
Just one briefly. I feel that this we're doing this law out of compliance. I thought you explained it very well.
Any other comments? Seeing no further comments, the question is do pass. On House Bill 1051, those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. The Secretary will call the roll.
Representative Kamak.
Aye.
Cronin.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Kirschman.
Aye.
Miller. Nelson.
Aye.
Parsley.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rounds.
Aye.
Stalzer.
Aye.
Westra.
Aye.
Condit.
Aye.
And Solem.
Aye.
There were 12 yeas, one absent.
Having received the majority of the vote of the members elect, House Bill 1051 passes, and Representative Rounds moves consent, seconded by Representative Kirschman. All in favor of the consent motion will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? 1051 is now on our consent calendar. Thank you. And as mentioned before, 1052 is moved to next week. Our next item of business is House Bill 1054. 1054 is an act to repeal certain rulemaking authority for the Director of Insurance. And with that, I will open public testimony for House Bill 1054 with proponents. Good morning, Mr. Moses.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Randy Moses, Department of Labor and Regulation, Division of Insurance. Not every day that we see an agency bring a bill to repeal their own rulemaking authority, but that's what you see today. We want to repeal 5841, and quite frankly, we're doing so just for a couple of basic reasons. Number one is, and maybe Doug Decker can tell you exactly how long ago this has been, but I know it's been at least 20 years since the LRC would have approved a rule for legality based on using this general authority, that this is simply not sufficient for general authority purposes and therefore is sitting on the books, not being used, and can't be used to the best of our knowledge and understanding. standing. Furthermore, there's some provisions within this section that we're appealing dealing with rules for life insurance. And as it so happens, we've passed other life insurance laws subsequent to this, and this, in fact, conflicts with other laws dealing with life insurance on top of it. So we have a law that's of no utility to us that conflicts with other statutes, and I can't think of another reason why you'd want a better reason why you'd want to repeal a statute than that. So we would certainly recommend you repeal a statute and support this bill. Thank you very much, and I'll stand by for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Moses. Any other proponent testimony for House Bill 1054? Proponent testimony. Seeing none, is there any opponent testimony? Anyone that does not believe we should remove statute? Seeing none, I will close the public testimony portion for House Bill 1054 and open it up for committee questions or action.
Chair.
Representative Rounds.
Move to pass.
Second.
The motion by Representative Round, do pass on 1054, seconded by Representative Nelson. Any comments, Representative?
Real short. I think we're seeing a number of these bills come down, and rulemaking, I think, this hasn't been used. It's got conflicts in some sections with another section. It's something that needs to be moved along. We like to get rid of statute.
Thank you, Representative. Any other comments? Seeing no further comments, the motion do pass on House Bill 1054. All in favor will say aye. All opposed, nay. The Secretary will call the roll.
Representative Kamek.
Aye.
Cronin.
Aye.
Greenfield.
Aye.
Kirschman.
Aye.
Miller. Nelson.
Aye.
Parsley.
Aye.
Peterson.
Aye.
Rounds.
Aye.
Stalzer.
Aye.
Westra.
Aye.
Consett.
Aye.
Solem.
Aye.
12 yeas, one excuse.
Having received a majority of the vote of the members-elect, House Bill 1054 passes. The motion to move 1054 to our consent calendar by Representative Greenfield, seconded by Representative Nelson. All in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? 1054 is now moved to consent. And just for housekeeping purposes, Representative Westra, would you, if needed, discuss this bill in caucus? And Representative Peterson, would you discuss this bill in your caucus, if you would, please? Thank you. And before I move on, let's go back to 1051. If I could have, even though it's on consent, there may be a question. Representative Stalzer, would you bring that to our caucus? Yeah. Appreciate it. And Representative Kirschman, take 1051 to your caucus. Thank you, sir. Moving on to the final item of business for our committee meeting is House Bill 1055. House Bill 1055 is an act to revise certain provisions regarding unemployment insurance, employers' charges, and claimant misrepresentation regarding benefits overpayment, and to correct references to certain provisions pertaining to unemployment insurance. Thank you. And we need to talk about making these titles so long. With that, I will open up public testimony and proponent testimony to House Bill 1055. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Pauline Heyer. I'm the Division Director for the Unemployment Division of the Department of Labor and Regulation. And House Bill 1055 comes to you as a result of two integrity provisions included in the Trade Adjustment Assistance Extension Act of 2011. These provisions are designed to crack down on unemployment fraud and protect the integrity of the state unemployment program. President Obama had signed this act back in October 21st, 2011, mandating states to enact these two provisions within 2 years of that date. And if we do not pass these provisions, South Dakota will be out of conformity with federal law. The Unemployment Insurance Advisory Council held meetings over the past year to discuss these provisions and recommend the penalties. There was a unanimous recommendations were made in the 2012 annual report to the governor and to the legislature. If you're not familiar with the council, it was established by statute, and it's responsible for reviewing the unemployment insurance program and making recommendations for its improvements. Section 1 of the bill establishes a monetary penalty for claimants who commit blatant and intentional fraud. For an example, if a claimant reported that they contacted an employer about a job when that employer doesn't even exist, they're fictitious. Or another example would be if they continue to file benefits and report that they are not working to us after they've already started that job. In 2012, we detected $1.5 million in overpayments, and nearly 40% of this was a result of fraudulent activity, amounting to just over $602,000. The actual number of individuals who committed this fraud in 2012 was 541. Currently, South Dakota law has no monetary penalty for fraud. Claimants are disqualified from receiving benefits for 4 weeks for every 1 week of fraud, not to exceed 52 weeks. House Bill 1055 establishes a monetary penalty of 50% of the amount of the overpayment for the first offense, and any subsequent offenses would result in a monetary penalty of 100% of the amount of the overpayment. So, for example, a $1,000 overpayment would be a $500 penalty for the first offense. Right now, we're averaging about, the average fraudulent overpayment is just over $1,000. It's $1,018. Any further offenses would then result in a monetary penalty of the full amount, so a $1,000 overpayment for the second offense would be a $1,000 penalty. The Act only requires 50%. However, after the Council gave this much debate and consideration and studied all the other states, they determined that 50% and 100% were more stringent and would be a more effective deterrent to repeat offenders. All of the monetary penalty money that will be collected will be deposited into the UI Trust Fund. Section 1 also removes the one-year limitation period for enforcing administrative fraud penalties. Removing the one-year limitation period was not part of the federal mandate, but the council felt that it was necessary. For an example, this is what would happen when the limitation for enforcing the fraud penalty was removed. If a claimant filed fraudulently for 3 weeks, they must therefore have to wait 12 weeks before they can collect benefits, 1 week for every, or 4 weeks for every 1 week. If they chose not to continue to file, but later they would file a claim, they must then wait 12 weeks before they would become eligible, even if they, more than 1 year had passed. Section 2 of the bill is the employer piece of the act. Normally, when an improper benefit payment is discovered, that amount is immediately credited back to an experience-rated employer. Under this bill, if an improper benefit payment would occur because the employer or their agent failed to respond timely or adequately to the department's request for information, they would not be eligible to receive the credit. Now, the employer fault piece only applies when an employer is potentially chargeable. So if an employer is not chargeable, then this would not apply. For example, an employer at fault would be if a worker files a claim, they say that they're laid off. We mail a notice to the employer asking for a response to this claim, and we receive none. The claimant is then allowed benefits based on their statement only, and the employer would then receives information on our decision, disagrees, appeals that decision, and during that hearing they bring up facts that do support that this individual is in fact discharged for work-connected misconduct. He wouldn't be entitled to benefits and would be held overpaid. We really don't anticipate much impact for employers. During the past 4 years, where average employer responsible overpayment error rate was less than 1%, it was 0.58%. And in 2012, the total overpayment amount as a result of employer error was around $40,000. And as I mentioned, Section 1 and 2 are federal mandates. If they are not passed, South Dakota would be out of federal compliance. And as a result, our employers would lose their Federal Unemployment Tax Act credit, the FUTA tax. that loss of that credit would increase their FUTA tax per employee from $42 to $420. Then Section 3 through 24 of this bill are a result of Governor Dugard's red tape review efforts. Section 3 just amends the law to include all non-charging subdivisions, and it repeals an obsolete non-charging provision. And then Section 4 through 24 just corrects some statute references. I respectfully ask for your support and passage of House Bill 1055, and I will stand by for questions.
Thank you very much. Is there any other proponent testimony?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, sir.
Members of the committee, Sean Lyons, South Dakota Retailers Association. Mr. Owen and I were in a race to see who could get up here first. Clearly, I'm younger and have better knees. I won't be repetitive. I think the previous testimony gave a good overview. I'm a member of our organization as a member of the UI Advisory Council. As we go through the vetting process, just like you all do each year, it certainly made sense. I think there may have been some reference, but maybe not as much as I would have liked. In terms of the surrounding states and where this puts us in the same accordance in terms of how we treat fraudulent claims, I would keep in mind, and you may hear some remarks this morning, that we may be only heading after the employees in this case, or those that are filing unemployment insurance claims, but I would just remind the committee that the employer is as well involved in this process. And so I think this kind of equals the responsibility. And again, we're just going after those folks, Mr. Chairman, that are fraudulently filing. We're not going after everybody. We're just going after the fraudulent filers. So this legislation makes sense to our organization. I'd certainly be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lyons. Now we'll give that opportunity to the slightly more senior and slightly more learned representative of the chamber.
Good morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you, I think, Mr. Chairman. tell Mr. Lyons to stay handy. I may need help getting out of the chair. I keep trying to make this complicated in my brain somehow, and I just can't. This is pretty straightforward, and it's a delight to have a UI bill that's not crisis. Everybody's not mad, and it's unbelievably complicated to explain. It's straightforward. The department's done a good job. We support the bill.
Thank you, sir. Any other proponent testimony?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Deb Mortensen, registered lobbyist for the Associated General Contractors. This appearance is for both the Highway Heavy Utilities chapter and the Building chapter. They have examined the bill. They've been involved in the process all the way through. They're cognizant of the requirements that are placed on employers for this compliance to happen, and they fully support it. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Any other proponent testimony? Proponent testimony. Seeing no further proponent testimony, is there any opponent testimony to House Bill 1055? Opponents. Good morning, sir.
Morning. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Mark Anderson. I'm the lobbyist for the South Dakota State Federation of Labor. I hesitate a little bit to get up here because I'm not necessarily an opponent of this bill. It's a bill that has to be passed. The problem that I have with it is the fact that when they had their meeting on it, the worker representative was not able to attend, so there was no discussion about the size of the penalty. I think, and I'll give you three reasons why I think that 50% is excessive. I don't have a problem with 100% because once you've been caught, you ought to know it, and so then I think it falls on the person. But when you're dealing with a worker who is drawing unemployment, it's going to be pretty tough for them to come up with the unemployment paying back, let alone the another 50% of it. If we look at the other states in the country, and you can find this on the Department of Labor's website, their presentation that they did on this. If you look at that presentation, you'll see that better than half of the states, from my count, it's about 34, have a penalty that's less than 50%. And the law only requires that it has to be 15% or higher. And the other thing that some people probably don't think about is in the construction industry, there's a lot of people in the wintertime or sometime during the year, they're potentially laid off. Now, a lot of my affiliates represent those kinds of members, and quite frankly, if you are a journeyman worker in the construction industry, you can live about anywhere where you want. You don't necessarily have to live in South Dakota. We have had the opportunity, at least in one of the affiliates that I'm a member of, we have had our members coming back to the state to live here. And I'm concerned that when you make things difficult on the unemployment system, those people might think that maybe I ought to just stay where I'm at, in Minnesota, Iowa, or wherever. And so for those three reasons, I would like you to consider that I think that penalty is a little high, and I'd at least like to have a little debate about that. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any other opponent testimony? Opponent testimony. Seeing no further opponent testimony, I would allow a brief rebuttal if you would like to address some of those concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do believe we had Carol Hinderrocker was present at the UI Advisory Council meeting, who would have been on the employer's, on the side of the employer or the employee.
Thank you. With that, I'm going to close the public testimony portion on House Bill 1055 and at this time open it up for committee questions. Questions. Representative Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I guess this question will be for whichever proponent's got the best knees and can get up there quickest.
I'm going to guess that's me.
Thank you.
Fairly presumptuous on your part.
I was closest.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This only deals with the penalty phase. If there is a fraudulent claim, there are possibly criminal activity involved. Has there ever been any type of criminal penalty put on somebody for making such a fraudulent claim?
Ms. Hart.
Mr. Please. Chair, yes, we do send cases for prosecution. We right now our standard is anything over $2,000. We do refer for prosecution, and I believe we have right now I think it's 58 outstanding cases on the books waiting to be prosecuted. We did do a public or a press release earlier this year. Or I should say, excuse me, that would have been last year, talking about the number of individuals that we had prosecuted. We had overpayments ranging from $13,000 on down to, the $2,000 range.
Thank you. Did you have a follow-up? No? Representative Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I also noticed the level that's mentioned here, the penalty, and it says in addition to any penalty imposed under this title, that the department shall fine essentially a person up to, or not up to, but equal to 50% of the amount of benefits, etc. First question is, what other penalties is a person subject to? Is it just the payback of the amount and the criminal, the potential for criminal charges, or is there something else that we're not being made aware of?
Mr. Chair, right now under current law, we do not have any monetary penalties for fraud. We just have the disqualification of the 1 week for every 4 weeks, which has a 1 year expiration penalty. The only penalty we have other than that would be that we do charge interest on any unpaid overpayment amount.
Follow up, Representative?
Please, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. Why did you settle on the 50% amount, and why is it not permissive that it may be up to that level? Instead, it shall be equal to 50%.
Please,
Mr. Chair. I guess I'm not really referring. When we talked in terms, we were saying 50% for the first offense, and then 100%. There was no leeway up to 50%. I'm not sure way it's written in.
Representative Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's essentially my question. Why is it one size fits all? Why don't we take a look at allowing for each individual case to be looked at on its own merit, on its own on a case by case basis, and say that it could be the 15% that Mr. Anderson said, it could be up to the 50% that's mentioned here in the proposed bill, in the proposed legislation.
Something, Mr. Chair, that the council didn't discuss. We did review all the other states, and I do have a copy of what other states, are planning to propose or do already have on the books, and I have a list that is current as of this week, if I could get the page to hand that out.
You have a document, Representative Greenfield?
I do, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Kirschman. If I might
please share
this with the committee, I see that Maine has a 100% of overpayment provision, Kansas 50%, and nobody else exceeds 33%. There's only one state with 33% listed. That's Alabama. And then it's down 25, 20, and 15%. Oh, and Missouri has 5% of overpayment every 6 months. I'm not entirely sure how that works.
Mr. Chair, that I believe what you were looking at was the one that was probably distributed during the August Advisory Council. We do, like I said, I do have an updated list. I thought we had copies here, but I do not. I just have one if somebody wants to make photocopies.
Thank you. And just at a glance, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed.
I'm seeing similar amounts. I see a 22.5% and 15, 25, 33. Maine, 100%. I guess my concern is, if you'd like to respond to this, my concern is that we bring the hammer, one size fits all. We don't allow for discretion whatsoever. And I guess my question is, how would your department be open to discussing a lesser penalty or the potential for some discretion? I recognize that you probably want to keep subjectivity out of the equation. So what about a 30% rate or 25, what have you?
I'm sorry.
I guess we would be willing to entertain that. I mean, I do know. However, I just want to reiterate that the council or our UI advisory council did. We did have public testimony on the 50%, and I believe our original recommendation to the council was 50, and they came back and determined that we should do the 50, and then the second offense was 100%.
Thank you. Representative Condon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question for you, if you could clarify this, these people have been caught.
Correct.
I mean, they've committed fraud. They have knowingly committed fraud against the state of South Dakota.
Mr. Chair, yeah, that's correct. I mean, fraud is blatant and intentional. They knowingly did this. It wasn't a matter of not understanding. These were acts of intentional misrepresentation to obtain benefits.
Follow up. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so in all these instances, it is like the state of South Dakota giving an interest-free loan to these people. Is that correct?
Please.
In a way, yes. We do charge a 12% interest rate on these for anything unpaid. So if it's paid back immediately, the interest rate they pay back. But it's just you could look at it as a loan, a 12% loan.
Okay. Thank you. Anything else?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Connell.
Just so that we have a clear picture of the range, what would be the range of the benefit to a given individual at this time? That how much is it a week or
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
The maximum benefit right now for an individual is $333. The average is for all, overall is $260 a week.
Okay. And did you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do.
And
in the past, well, I guess you probably, is the problem of fraud, what is the length of time that usually that you, the range that you determine that? I mean, is it traditionally within a few weeks or a few months or?
Go ahead,
please.
Right now, if you kind of pencil it out with looking at the average fraudulent overpayment, you're looking at about 4 weeks by the time they commit it to the time we catch it. So it averages about 4 weeks of benefits.
Okay. Enough? Okay. Any other questions? Seeing no further questions, I will close that portion of the hearing on House Bill 1055, and at this point, open it up for committee discussion. Representative Kirschman.
Can we amend this then? Could we amend it?
We certainly can.
Even though a board has voted one way.
Well, I mean, it's the board.
DUI.
We can either amend it here or we can amend it on the House floor if we want to allow some additional time for labor to come up with, you know, any additional information. I don't think anyone outside of a couple of us has seen this list, and perhaps it would be most prudent to get that information, well, to everyone, and perhaps take that amendment up on the House floor. Representative Parsley.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I didn't ask any questions because I thought the questions I had interest in had been asked, although yesterday, as we discussed this, I did ask specifically about moving from 0 to 50%. While I think there needs to be some teeth in this fraudulent activity, we do have people who are in a situation they don't want to be in generally when they're on unemployment. Not always is it willful, as I understood yesterday. Certainly, it's responsibility of the individual to be truthful and honest, but sometimes they do make legitimate mistakes in what they understand and what the actual unemployment situation is as they're pleading their case. Or in the case where an employer doesn't respond, while we have a penalty for that, that could put an employee in a position of having an untruthful claim because the employer has not responded to that. So I guess I'm in a long way saying that I support your notion of further discussion on this and potentially an amendment on the floor to reduce that penalty to some level other than 50%. Second penalty, I agree. You've done it once, 100%, but the first penalty I think may be a little bit onerous.
Thank you, Representative. Any other discussion?
Mr. Chairman.
I'll recognize Representative Greenfield, then Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was thinking that I would offer an amendment, but instead I'll just throw this out for the committee's consideration. When given the chart here, I failed to recognize that there are two columns. I was looking across, and so I guess in the interest of fairness, full disclosure, there are a couple other states that are at 50%, Colorado and Connecticut. Maine starts at 50%, then 75%, then 100%. But, again, the vast majority are at 25% or under. And Alaska is also at 50%, I see. I may have missed a couple, but... But I think that it bears further discussion, and I do think that 50% is a rather onerous burden to put on somebody who, again, has fallen into a bad situation, unfortunate situation. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The only advantage of amending it here in committee is we could amend it in committee, and then we could reopen it for discussion if those that are here to testify could testify on the amendment. And on the floor, they wouldn't have that chance till it got over to the next body. Thank you.
Representative Consett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'm having a little bit of problem trying to justify somebody that willingly is committing fraud. They know what they're doing. They're caught. And although I understand that there are certain circumstances in it, it is not a good situation to be when you're backed into the corner with unemployment. But they chose to do this. And so I think what we need to do here is send a strong message. And I think 50% does that.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Rounds.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to move due pass on House Bill 1055.
Second. We were still in a discussion mode. Unless there are no other comments, I would entertain that motion due pass on House Bill 1055. And the second was Representative Westra. Discussion, Representative Rounds.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's the purpose of the motion. I think it'll allow the discussion on the motion itself of the due pass. And listening to the testimony here, taking into account what we've heard from the proponents and opponents, some good points were brought up. Number one, a person is down on their luck, hard times. But also, we're talking fraud. We're talking something that people get jail time with. An intentional act has to be proved. There's recourse should there be a question whether it was fraud or not. I'm sure there's recourse for these individuals. That being said, we have an intentional act, and when we heard the testimony of the average of about South Dakota, $260 roughly a week, and it's about 4 weeks before it's caught. We're talking $520 probably on the average. I think there's some interest tacked onto that. But that's our money. I mean, that's the state's money we're talking about here. We can have this discussion on the floor on an amendment. Let's bring the discussion. But I think we should send us down to the floor, have the debate there also. I would oppose any amendment up here, and I would ask anybody else to oppose the amendment, but I think we should move this down to the floor and ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative. Any other discussion? Representative Greenfield.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm going to ask that we oppose the current motion. The way I look at it, the federal government comes with a mandate, and until they did that, we didn't deem it necessary to have a 50% penalty on the books. Well, here come the feds with their mandate, and we say, well, by gosh, we got to get tough on fraud. Weren't we tough enough on fraud before? How in the world have we gotten this far as a state, and how has the unemployment insurance trust fund managed to stay flush without the 50% penalty? I think this is, again, onerous. It's a burden on people, and I think we could ease into it, as so many other states have chosen to do, rather than going to the 50%. Recognize that it's a serious offense, but the folks in the department have had an existing policy for a lot of years, no doubt, and now because the feds come with their brilliant ideas, we're embracing it and we're going all out hog wild. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For once, I'm going to have to maybe oppose my good and learned colleague and dear friend. As expression goes, even a blind squirrel gets a nut once in a while. And I think in this case, the federal government probably corrected a problem that was an oversight here in South Dakota. When we hear of businesses like in Mitchell, a little Italian restaurant closing because they can't get people to work, and we've got people out there that are defrauding the unemployment system, that's travesty. And being on unemployment is not something that people should be abusing. And I agree with my learned colleague from Rapid City. These folks knowingly and willfully did this, and they've stolen money. And the fact that they're not getting prosecuted for such a crime, I think they should count their blessings. And I definitely don't think they should be rewarded for doing so. So I would oppose any measure to reduce the 50% amount. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Representative. Was there another comment?
Yes, Mr.
Please.
Chairman. We're talking about some folks that have chosen to cheat. And we're talking about a situation where a few years ago, our business had the privilege of paying a surcharge for a period of time because the unemployment situation in our state was such that we had some problems keeping it in good shape. And I want to do everything we can to keep this unemployment insurance in great shape, which includes really discouraging the folks that want to cheat. And when you defraud the government, whether it be state government or federal government, it's a fairly, if we're talking about a $500 penalty, that's a fairly small penalty to pay when you're actually committing fraud.
Thank you. Any other comments? If the chair may add, I'm looking at this as this is to cover fraud, and I know there had been some suggestions that would think that it may cause an undue hardship on an individual. However, the way I see this is that individual does in fact have a job while collecting unemployment compensation, and so essentially you're getting two paychecks. So I don't see it as an undue hardship on an individual. It's a penalty that they're paying. Now, for the 50% part, this had been vetted through discussion, and I think through discussion, had that group come to a decision saying 35% would be adequate, then I think that's what we would see in this statute. However, I also believe that if we have a penalty, let's put some teeth to it, or let's give them a big enough hammer to that either it doesn't happen at all, or when it does happen, for darn sure there won't be a repeat offense. So with that, the motion at hand is due pass on House Bill 1055. All in favor will say aye. All opposed, nay. The secretary will call the roll.
Representatives Kamak.
Aye.
Cronin.
Aye.
Greenfield.
No.
Kirschman?
No.
Miller and Nelson?
Aye.
Parsley?
No.
Peterson?
Aye.
Rounds?
Aye.
Stalzer?
Aye.
Westra?
Aye.
Consett?
Aye.
Solem?
Aye.
We have 9 yeas and 3 yeas, 1 absent.
Having received a majority of the vote of the members-elect, House Bill 1055 passes. And Representative Rounds, would you be so kind to take this to the floor? And Representative Parsley, would you discuss this in your caucus? Thank you very much. Well, that concludes the business for today. Are there any other comments for the good of the cause? If not, I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion to adjourn by Representative Rounds, seconded by Representative Consett. All in favor will say aye.
Aye.
All opposed, we are adjourned.